Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. One quick note about Michael Hill's newscast there. I should have jumped in and said it when he said it. Time to start paying attention again to the New York Knicks if you're at all of a sports fan or just one of those marginal sports fans who only pays attention when things get interesting. Things are getting really interesting for the first time in a long time with the Knicks and their star Jalen Brunson, who scored more points than any Knick ever in a playoff game yesterday. So just saying, another source of entertainment for some of you who are marginal sports fans. And if you plan on driving into Manhattan south of 60th Street, remember this date, June 30th. Maybe the Knicks will be NBA champions by then. That's when the MTA is set to begin congestion pricing, barring the outcomes of legal challenges against the plan, as most of you know. And also, as you just heard from Michael on the newscast, the MTA just announced some new Metro North and Long Island Railroad discounts for trips within the city to go with congestion pricing, to encourage commuting by rail and offer that carrot to people who live on the Metro North and Long Island Railroad lines within the city. There's more transportation news as well. City bus service just got a $12 million boost from the state budget, but that pilot program where there was one free bus line in each borough, that's now set to end. And the MTA is ramping up its crackdown on fare beating and on drivers who evade tolls as well. Don't forget about the toll evaders. We'll talk about all that and more with Stephen Nesson, WNYC and Gotham's transportation reporter, your friendly neighborhood transit reporter on X. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to the show. Is there a Stephen Nesson in the house?
Sorry, I'm here.
Hello, you go. Hi there. Now we got you. So I guess the first thing to ask you about is the status of the congestion pricing litigation, now that the MTA has announced an actual start date, June 30th, which is a Sunday, by the way. I guess that's to give people sort of one day to get a little warmed up. But how confident is the MTA? How confident is the reporting about whether the lawsuits are going to allow them to actually start?
Well, MTA Chair Jana Lieber has been making the rounds on television. He was on TV again this morning, and he sounded confident. He said, things are, you know, looking good. We're heading in the right direction. So he was sounding confident. I should add that, you know, that June 30th start date that you mentioned, like we've been reporting, it was actually going to be June 15th. He said this morning they pushed it back because they want folks to have more time to enroll in the exemptions and the discount plans that were just put out, I believe, Friday. So that's, you know, that's part of the reasoning behind the timing. But as far as your question about the lawsuits and the confidence, I mean, it's still out there, Brian. There is a New Jersey judge right now who is, you know, reviewing all the notes from, you know, a couple days of oral arguments from the New Jersey, from the state of New Jersey, as well as from federal experts on congestion pricing, you know, the Federal Highway Administration. And he could rule either way, Brian. He could say that the MTA needs to go back and provide more information, you know, about the impacts of congestion pricing. He could say we're good to go. But there's a couple of New York lawsuits that are yet to be heard in front of a judge. And it's a bundle of cases. I think you've spoken about it before. It's like the Staten Island Teachers Union, other groups from Staten Island, including, I believe, like civil liberties groups, as well as some concerned parents in Battery Park. That is set for mid-May, those oral arguments. And so that judge could say some part of the plan, you know, is harmful to the environment, or the MTA needs to go back and revise it or rework it. So that June 30th date is, you know, best wishes from the MTA. And that's, you know, they need to set a date to plan it. But there's two judges that could really, you know, throw a wrench in this whole thing.
And as long as litigation usually takes, it seems very likely that all of those rulings won't even come down one way or another before June 30th. So I'm guessing, and I don't know if you've reported on this yet, but that now that they've announced a start date, that there will be motions filed in court in one or more of these cases for a temporary injunction. That is, don't let it start while the lawsuits are proceeding to a final resolution, and judges will have to rule on that. Yes?
Well, the New Jersey judge was very clear that he knew the MTA wants to start it in mid-June and was going to issue a ruling before then. So that's the New Jersey side. The New York judge hasn't even, we haven't even heard from him yet or her. So we don't know how they're going to decide. So in that case, yeah, maybe what you said.
Something to watch for. Listeners, we can take a few transportation calls as we get this roundup from WNYC in Gotham is Stephen Nesson, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 on the things I mentioned just a minute ago in the intro, or if you have anything else relevant to Stephen and what he may be reporting on, 212-433-9692, because he is your friendly neighborhood transportation reporter. Call or text. Staying on congestion pricing and something else that's unresolved about it, earlier this month you reported on some of the still unanswered questions, and paraphrasing here from Gothamist's weekly transportation newsletter, On the Way. By the way, listeners, if you're interested in transit news, sign up for the On the Way newsletter. After more than a dozen public hearings and a 4,000-page analysis, the MTA still couldn't tell you whether drivers on the Brooklyn Bridge would be told if they went to the FDR Drive going in either direction. I don't even understand the question. But now that there's a start date on the books, has that one question been answered?
Yes, yes. And I should clarify that it's not that they couldn't answer it. It was just that there wasn't a clear answer anywhere online to our question. And it did take a couple phone calls with the MTA and getting their congestion pricing expert on the phone with us to explain it, which to me was pretty shocking, considering you're right, June 30th is when they want to launch this. How can there be such a simple question that's unanswerable anywhere on the internet? But it was not answerable on the internet, but we answered the question. And I'll explain it, Brian. And I'm pretty sure we've had calls when you and I have been on before about this very question. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to finally be able to clarify and explain it.
It's about
folks
staying on the perimeter on the FDR Drive without actually going onto the city streets.
Right. So we know the FDR Drive is not going to be charged if drivers are on it. But what if you're in Brooklyn, crossing the Brooklyn Bridge, and want to get on the FDR Drive? If you're going north, there's a ramp that does not touch city streets. You can just cross the Brooklyn Bridge, get on the FDR Drive north. But if you want to go south, that's a different story. It actually touches down for about 80 feet, between, I think it's on Pearl Street, and then you get on the FDR Drive south. So there is no way to go from the Brooklyn Bridge to the FDR Drive south without being told. You will be hit with that $15 charge.
You will be hit. That's kind of weird, though, right?
It's a quirk, and I was talking to Sam Schwartz about it, and even he didn't know about it. And he was pointing out that if Robert Moses had finished his job on the FDR Drive South, there would have been a ramp directly connecting it, but he didn't get what he wanted in that regard. And it is like a confusing spaghetti swirl of on and off ramps there.
I think Janet in Little Italy, which is not far from there, may have a question kind of on the topic. Janet, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Thank you. Good morning. Yes, my question is about whether New York City residents will get any kind of a break, particularly elders or families with young children who cannot realistically exercise the option of public transportation. Someone who's 80 years old cannot take the subway to Port Authority to get out of town. And will there be any consideration given to some kind of discount for elders or people who have to travel with young children or animals?
Janet, thank you.
So here's my answer. When the legislation was written, there was an exemption for residents in the congestion zone that make less than $60,000 a year. They will get a tax credit equal to the tolls they paid. So I suppose an elderly person is maybe not making $60,000 a year. You know, they would qualify for that. But for parents with kids or dogs, that is not part of the exemption.
Right.
And if you transport someone with a disability, though, or if you have like a handicap license plate, you would get an exemption.
Well, I think that's kind of where Janet's question lives, right? It's like, where's the line for what counts as a disability? Maybe you have somebody who doesn't have handicap tags for their car. Maybe they don't own the car, but somebody's giving somebody a ride who, for whatever reason, it's not easy for them to take a bus or a subway. There's no way to register that, it sounds like.
Well, there's the disability exemption. So you can go to the MTA's website. I apologize, it's a bit of a mouthful, but just Google MTA congestion relief exemptions, and you should go to the MTA website. And they have a whole page on how to apply for that. You know, for someone who has a disability or a health condition that prevents them from using public transit, and there's a registered vehicle that is mainly, you know, just for transporting that person, whether it's a caregiver or, you know, a family member, you know, they could apply for an exemption. So you have to go through that process. It's online. The MTA opened it up Friday. There's a whole slew of requirements and proof that you need to provide. And they will, you know, the MTA will make that that determination.
One more on exemptions. And, you know, we, as you know, because we've done it, we could take exemption calls for the next hour and not exhaust the questions that people have. But relevant to what you were saying about when you enter Manhattan from the Brooklyn Bridge and you can not pay the toll if you go north on the FDA, but you have to pay it if you go south on the FDR. Listener writes, how do you get out of Manhattan to Queens or Brooklyn without a toll?
And oh, Brian. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, I feel like the one thing we always get when I'm on the show is, what is the deal with the Queensboro Bridge? Because every time I'm on, we get a call about it and folks want to know about it. And I think it behooves the MTA to really lay this out for folks. But there is no way to cross the Queensboro Bridge from Manhattan without being tolled. Because as any driver knows, all of the ramps to get on the Queensboro Bridge in Manhattan heading to Queens are all below 60th Street. So even if you're coming from above the zone and you have no intention of driving around Manhattan, just want to go to Queens, you will still get hit with that toll because all the ramps are below the zone.
And there's no hack for that? I mean, is Jenna Lieber, you know, head of the MTA, really okay with that? I mean, it doesn't sound like that's the intent of the toll, but it's going to snag people.
It's going to snag people. I will add, you know, there's one exemption, Brian, that people will definitely want to know about. If you're coming from Queens and you're going into Manhattan on that bridge, the Queensboro Bridge, there are three ramps. Two of them will take you into the tolling zone, but there's one, it's the upper level north ramp that will take drivers to 62nd Street, which is outside of the zone where you will not be tolled. But all the other ramps are tolled. And I know it'll never put it to rest and we'll still get questions about it every week, but just putting that out there for folks.
You're right. We've gotten that question together multiple times in the past. And I think you finally, or they finally provided the answer. And I think that was very clear. Now, moving on from congestion pricing and onto bus service, the state budget includes more than $12 million, I see, to increase service on bus routes. But the pilot program that made one bus route in each borough free recently will come to an end at the end of this year. So let's take that piece first.
Sure.
I'm sure it was extremely popular. And it was supposed to be, like I say, a pilot program for figuring out if they're going to add more free New York City bus routes. So why are they ending it?
Well, first of all, the MTA was not fighting to keep it continuing. Again, MTA Chair Jano Lieber said recently, the other week, that they didn't see a noticeable increase in any ridership on those routes, which I think to them would have been an indication that it was a success. He said something like 90% of the people that were on the route are the ones that would take it anyways.
Huh.
Of course, that doesn't, you know, take into account the huge, you know, relief in money for those folks who aren't paying, you know, $100 a month for bus service. But to his mind, it wasn't successful because it didn't increase ridership. Additionally, and again, I don't know, I give riders a little more benefit of the doubt on this one, but he said it would confuse people about which routes were free and which ones weren't. Again, there's a big sign that says free bus, no fare. So it seemed pretty clear there was only one route in each borough. But they were not fighting to continue it. I think some of the state legislators, you know, they wanted to spend $45 million to continue and expand it. And that just didn't have the support from the governor or the MTA or enough lawmakers. So what they did get was what you mentioned was, you know, a slight expansion, a $12 million expansion in existing bus routes, which, again, is way less than what they were fighting for. Again, they wanted another $45 million to increase bus service, but it got whittled down to $12 million in the end.
Yeah, and I see that General Lieber, head of the MTA, said he's concerned that free buses send the wrong message at a moment when they're trying to push back on fare evasion. So mixed right. message?
Yeah, I suppose so. But, you know, when I went out to talk to riders, they were really happy that they didn't have to pay $100-something a month for, you know, for their unlimited Metro card. It would have been, you know, it's a lot of money in their pocket every month over, you know, a year. That really adds up for working class folks.
Let's take a call. Michael in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Stephen Nesson. Hi, Michael.
Hi, I'm Brian. So my question is, they talked about for the Long Island Railroad and Metro North riders who are in the city getting a 10% discount. If you use Omni instead of the Metro card, there was no monthly discount. Now, I know they give a weekly discount, but if you do the math and you have the monthly discount, It's not the same discount. You're losing money there. Why is that happening?
That's a new one to me. Stephen, are you aware of that? Honestly, I didn't even know you could use Omni on Metro North or the Long Island Railroad. So I'm not sure I understand the question, but you're much more into the details than I am.
Yeah, you know, I do have to plead somewhat unclear on this one. I don't know how much Omni has expanded into Long Island Railroad and Metro North. I know it's coming soon. I if the caller says they're using it now, that's interesting. I was not necessarily aware of that. But
I didn't
mean
that.
I think
that you
go ahead, Michael. You want to try to clarify?
I guess I didn't ask clearly. I know you can't use Omni on the Metro North or Long Island Railroad. What I'm saying is I'm saying that they're giving this as a new discount to people who live in the city. However, if you use the subways and the buses, local buses and the subway, then if you use Metro North as a monthly discount, if you use rather the Metro card, there's a monthly discount. But if you use Omni, there's no monthly discount. You still have the weekly discount. And because of that, people who did use the monthly discount with the Metro card are paying more.
It's really a Metro card versus Omni system question.
Yes. Yes. And in fact, at the MTA committee meetings, which I was just tuning into this morning, there were actually some riders that said pretty much the same thing. Like, we appreciate the discount, but then we have to get on the subways. There should be a free transfer, they think, to the subways from Metro North or Long Island Railroad, which would, you know, offset that. But that's right. I mean, if you're using, if you're switching, you still have to pay, you know, the full Metro card. And if you're using Omni, that's right. There's no monthly card, although the MTA argues the weekly discount is still cheaper than a monthly card, although we're still doing the math on that one.
Right. You reported yesterday that the state budget includes one obscure detail that could have major implications, a ban on the use of facial recognition to enforce fare evasion. Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I spoke with lawmakers, they were sort of saying, like, you know, this is sort of a line in the sand. Like, they want to, you know, start to at least rein in the use of facial recognition for fare evasion, especially if the MTA is, you know, increasing the penalties, which they are. In the budget, you know, right now you can have that maximum ticket is $100. They're going to raise that to a $200 fine if someone gets, you know, more than four fare evasion tickets in a given period of time. But they added this provision to sort of start, you know, setting the bar. And this comes as the MTA, as we've spoken about, is increasing the use of surveillance cameras across the system. You know, the one thing about this, though, and the NYCLU confirmed it, is that while the MTA can't use it to crack down on fare evasion, the NYPD still has, you know, carte blanche access to MTA surveillance videos, and they most certainly do use facial recognition when identifying folks. Although they do say they use a human to match it before they just go and arrest people. But civil liberties folks say, you know, it's not reliable, it's racist, the technology, and it can lead to, you know, wrongful arrests and pretty ugly situations.
And yeah, and here's a comment on that from a listener who has an opinion. Says 30 years from now, they'll be talking about the Lieber legacy of policies enforcing racial discrimination and segregation, much like we talk about the legacy of Robert Moses today. Fair or unfair to Lieber, the head of the MTA? That's one listener's opinion. There it is. But what about toll evasion? It really does seem like more and more drivers have found clever ways to cover up or obstruct their license plates, and there isn't quite the same public outrage, it seems to me. So does the city, does the state have a solution to that?
Yeah, so the budget did increase the penalties for that. Anyone caught violating the law would be forced to surrender the cover, the thing that's covering their plate. They could be subjected to a fine up to $500 if someone's caught more than three times covering their plate in a five-year period. You know, they could have their vehicle registration suspended. So, you know, as congestion pricing is coming online, you know, there is a increased, you know, at least group of penalties for it. You know, I should add that it is a problem. I think, you know, when the MTA puts it out there, the amount of money lost is much more on buses than it is on fares and tolls. And, you know, the MTA would say, like, while it looks bad, it's actually a really small number of people that commit toll evasion.
What can they do about bus fare evasion?
Well, it's, you know, they are doing enforcement. They have these teams called Eagle Teams that go on buses and check whether people have paid the fare. It's pretty laborious. And as my wife will tell you, who takes the kids to school on the bus, it's infuriating because they will also hold up the bus while they check people's phones to see if they paid, and they're sort of weaving their way through a very crowded bus while people are trying to get to school and work. So that's quite laborious. You know, one thing that we've spoken about, I mean like the On the Way team, our transit team here, is about making it easier for people to pay the fare on the buses, because right now they only have rear door boarding on SBS buses, those select bus service buses.
Right.
But on the regular buses, you know, they have Omni readers in the back of the bus, but they're turned off because the MTA wants everyone to go through the front of the bus.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, there's an argument to be made that making it easier for people to pay will result in, you know, more payments. But that said, it is bad. Like on those SBS buses, I think 54% of riders don't pay the fare.
Wow.
That's more than half, obviously. And on the regular buses, it's a little bit less. It's like 43%, but still pretty high.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. I've told the story with you before about being on an SBS bus where the inspector came on and walked through, and, you know, it's a little fear inducing, right? Guy in a, with a, I think he had a badge of some kind or a uniform of some kind for the MTA, is like coming on and checking your receipts. And then, yeah, how analog and old world to still have to, for all the other buses, line up and go on one by one. So, yeah, they have some problems to solve. Interesting text from a listener who writes, I believe the MTA missed an opportunity. Had they committed to a global fare decrease upon implementation of congestion pricing, they would not see the increase in revenue at the start, but for the long term, it would have minimized their PR problem or at least created a hefty argument in favor of congestion pricing. That was very short-sighted. So they did announce, you know, that very small thing, I think it's fair to call it, in support of the congestion pricing rollout, which is that 10% discount for Metro North and Long Island Railroad trips within the city. But it's really interesting suggestion. I don't know if it ever came up. Decrease the fare, at least temporarily, globally, as they roll out congestion pricing. Or maybe the free bus route pilot experiment was, you know, their evidence that by reducing the fare it's not going to increase ridership. I don't know. Only by that stick of the congestion pricing toll.
Yeah. It is interesting. You know, I think they actually went the opposite route. They just raised the fares last year.
That's true.
As we remember. Because really, I mean, the money is just like, it's really separate pools. Like for them, you know, your fare goes to pay for the operating budget, whereas the tolls from congestion pricing go to the capital budget, like, you know, buying new signals, train cars, making stations ADA accessible. So it's really two separate pools of money. And the operating budget is, you know, as we reported for the last couple of years, was really in crisis due to COVID. And they're just sort of getting back on stable footing. They did get some more money last year in the budget to sort of balance the budget for the next couple of years. But they really do rely on the fares and the tolls, which is why, you know, there's so much talk about fare evasion and cracking down on it. It's, you know, it's not a drop in the bucket, but there are lots of different ways they could find to get more money as well. You know, I've done stories on charging for parking on the street. Someone said, you know, you could, if you charged more, you could actually fund free transit for everyone if you got drivers to pony up more just to park on the streets for free.
Last thing for today, and we'll touch this briefly, but it's really worthy of its own segment. New York City streets are getting deadlier. The city recorded 60 traffic deaths in the first 3 months of this year. That's up from last year. And the state legislature did just pass SAMI's law, which means the city will be allowed to lower speed limits to 20 miles per hour, lowering the default limit of 25 that exists in the five boroughs now. How much safer do the sponsors of that bill or any experts say it might make the streets?
Oh, it'll have a, you know, it's a wildly successful move. Like everyone says, like the lower the speed limit, the less deadly a crash would be if someone is hit by a vehicle. So it could really be the difference between life or death, 5 miles per hour.
And if the state law now allows the city to lower it to 20 miles an hour, does that mean the city's going to, or just that the state will allow it to, and then we'll see?
We've certainly seen indications from the city council that there is a lot of support for lowering the speed limit. I'm sure there'll be pushback, but right now the city council is allowed to vote and do it themselves without getting approval from Albany, which had been the default for as long as I've been alive.
Stephen Nesson, WNYC and Gotham's transportation reporter. Always great to have you on. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.